Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're going to turn our attention to seed saving. Our next two guests have been growing their own food and saving seeds for about 25 years. And in 2022, they founded Oshkosh Seed Savers. And we're going to talk to them about the organization. With us, Jason Mills and Julia Chabowski. Jason has a PhD in botany, studied plant community ecology, he's taught at a university level, now manages his non-commercial organic urban micro farm. And Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Appreciate having you with us. Julia Chabowski has a PhD in musicology, a professor at UW Oshkosh. Julia, welcome to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
As we talk with them, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about seeds, saving seeds, or maybe forming a seed collective? Are you wondering how to save those seeds from your garden? Give a call. The number's 800-642-1234. Or you could email us, and the email address, talk@wpr.org. What was the spark that inspired you to found Oshkosh Seed Savers?
I can start with that. Yeah. Well, if you remember kind of the mode we were all in 2022, we're trying to crawl out of pandemic mode. And we were noticing a lot of rising interest in gardening. And Jason and I, you know, as you mentioned, we had been growing our own food and saving seeds for a long time. We were connected with the national organization, Seed Savers Exchange, based in Iowa, and we traded seeds through that network. But we knew the value of locally adapted seed, and we wondered if there were seed savers in our area. We assumed there were, and we just thought, well, how can we build up a local network? So we said, okay, we're going to host a seed swap in the driveway, and we just tried to get the word out. It was real grassroots, people came. And then we did it. It was in the spring, and then we did another in the fall, and we did spring and fall for a few years. And through that, we did meet some really experienced seed savers in our area. You know who you are, Celia, Chris. Some of these folks had, you know, much more experience than we did, and they've brought a lot to this organization. But besides those really experienced seed savers, we met some hundreds, actually, of people who were enthusiastic but didn't have the experience in seed saving, and a lot of people who thought gardening and growing their own food was a good idea, but they were novices, absolute novices. And so all of those folks have shaped the organization. Right now, our mission is to curate and maintain a locally adapted seed collection from which we share seeds freely. And then there's an educational piece. So we do a lot of we produce educational materials. We do a lot of hands-on demonstrations to support the idea of growing your own food.
Wow, that's a lot. Jason, how do you keep this going? Is this a commercial venture in any way?
It's not at all commercial. All of the seed that we share with people, we share that freely. So we rely on donations and volunteers who help us manage our field site. We have, this season, three gardens where we are growing seed to share with our community. Our backyard garden we've been using that for quite a while now. It's extensive, and it's obviously very convenient for us to work there. So we produce some seed in our backyard garden. We have a friend who has some garden space not too far from us. She's allowing us to grow a few seed crops there. And then we have another friend on the edge of Oshkosh who has a very large property, and it affords us pretty good isolation for many of the crops. We have about 3,000 square foot plot out there where we grow many different seed crops. And so the work is spread across these three different locations. And I think for the large field plot, at least, we rely on volunteers to help us do things like weeding, tending the plants, harvesting, for seeds. And then I think it was maybe 2 weeks ago, we had a big seed cleaning party in our driveway where we invited members of our group to come over, and people just helped us process all of these fruits to free up the seeds from the fruits so that we can later on package those and distribute those.
That sounds like a messy proposition. Describe describe a little bit, maybe, Julia, how that works.
The seed cleaning?
Yeah.
Well, there's wet seeds and dry seeds, right? Dry seeds are like shelling beans, like shelling legumes. We do a lot of legumes of different species. So just shelling the dry legumes. And, you know, that's the table that everyone goes to first. It's kind of like tangible and fun, you know, people chatting while they do it. You know, twisting the corn, you know, shelling corn, twisting the kernels off the cobs. And then the messy part is we set up a makeshift outdoor sink. The messy ones are eggplant. You know, you gotta get in there and squeeze out the slimy seeds from what are overgrown by harvest standards fruits, right? So it can be messy, but you know, it's fun and a lot gets done in an afternoon.
How many people are involved? If you think about the whole process, how many people get involved in this?
Well, we had at our last spring seed swap, we had about 100 people come to share seed and get seed from us. At the plant share we did, we had about 100. The volunteers that help us run that field site Jason mentioned, we've got about 20 volunteers that come periodically. So that gives you a sense. And we're connected with about 230 all total in the Fox Valley. So.
On your website, you say that you maintain and distribute locally adapted varieties that are culturally important to the history, historical and current inhabitants of the region. Talk about the idea behind that. Both of you could comment.
Yeah, maybe I'll start, Jason, and then I'll pass it to you. But the I should say first that Oshkosh and the Fox Valley in general has been a resettlement site for refugees for a long time. And it's actually a very, very culturally diverse place in terms of where people are coming from and what they're bringing. And we understand food as culture, right? And so especially for newcomers, we realize the importance of being able to share produce that they recognize from home. And this produce is very often not available at the farmers markets or in the grocery stores or at the food pantries, right? So I'm talking about Nana Chungu eggplant, an African eggplant, Holmes Syrian summer squash, for example, Karini peppers from Myanmar. So part of our project has been to source seeds from the global regions that newcomers have come from and see if they can grow here. And this is where Jason's background in botany really helps out. You know, often we get seeds and they don't grow very well here at first. But if we can get a crop to the seed stage, if we can harvest some seed, then we have now selected for local adaptation. And so if we can get anything at all, then we grow it again the next year and again and again. And after a few years, you have a population of seed that will grow here. So we're kind of teaching these global crops to grow here. And then there's that connection to that's our community building, right? Because these crops are connected to the people that live here. And it's tremendously satisfying to be able to share produce and then seeds so that these crops can be grown here.
Yeah, it's really cool. Jason, you want to add to this?
I guess I might add a little bit about the adaptation part of the process. So as Julia mentioned, we maybe in year one try to get some seeds from a new variety. If we do get those seeds, I will replant those the following year. And again, some plants will die, others will survive and make seed, and then we save those and replant those. And that process we repeat year after year. So the idea for our entire collection is, I think, centered on that process where we are producing seeds that should do well in Oshkosh and the surrounding area because all of those seeds are grown here. And this is in contrast to maybe many of the seeds that gardeners encounter, which they find at a hardware store or they order online from a seed company. In many cases, it's not clear where those seeds were grown. They could have been grown in a place which is very different from Wisconsin in terms of the soil, the pests, the climate. And so when people plant those seeds here, they usually work out okay, and you get, you know, tomatoes or cucumbers or whatever. But we like to produce locally grown seed that we believe in the longer term will give you better results.
Yeah, it's an amazing process that you're doing. Talking with Jason Mills and Julia Chabowski, founders of the Oshkosh Seed Savers Collective. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments as we move along. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Talking today with the founders of the Oshkosh Seed Savers Collective, Jason Mills and Julia Chabowski. A very successful effort in my mind, and I think a lot of people's mind, to save seeds, and also the concept of locally grown seeds. That's really important from the sound of it, Jason.
It is. A lot of commercial seeds are produced in places that are different from Oshkosh or wherever you might live in Wisconsin. So if you're saving seeds in your own garden and planting those out year after year, you should be developing a population that does very well in your garden. So I think the locally produced seed is, all things equal, that's going to be the way to go.
How many events do you host each year, maybe, and talk about those events?
Sure. Julia? Sure, I can take, I can take that. So we're still growing, you know, organically, if you'll excuse the pun, but, you know, we're trying to cater to what our community wants and what people want to be involved in. So it's about six or so events a year. Our big annual event now is the spring seed swap. And if folks want to keep an eye out for that, we welcome absolutely anyone. We host it in a public place. Now, these days, we've moved out of the driveway, Larry, as you got to say. We've moved out of the driveway. We host it in a public place indoors. People want it indoors because we aim for the first weekend in March. So I don't have quite the date and location set yet, but first weekend in March. And folks can get in touch with us if they want to be coming to that. So that's the big one. Then throughout the growing season, we have hands-on demonstrations where we'll show what people are asking us for. So these vary. They're real seed saving things. So we do like how to save seeds from squash, for example, and we show people how that looks, and people do it with their hands, and then they give them a handout. So they have the written instructions and then they've done it. So it really can be meaningful for folks. We also, so the hands-on demonstrations in the garden, and then the seed cleaning event, which we mentioned earlier in your show, that where we all get together in the fall. We just did this a couple weeks ago, and we see. So basically, our events are mostly, in the garden, like hands-on, mm-hmm. and it's kind of like learn by doing events. You know, they're not lectures where we stand and tell people stuff. We want them actively involved.
So somebody else wants to know more about the seed swap and what it looks like. Can you describe that?
Yeah, I sure can. Whether it was in the driveway or in the public library, which is probably where we'll be this year, but we set up a bunch of tables. We have greeters at the front end to kind of help people get oriented. We have a zone for if you're bringing seeds to donate, either commercial seeds that are extra to you or seeds you've saved yourself. We have a certain area for that to leave. People just drop off and then other people pick up. It's just kind of a free-for-all zone, right? Then we have the Oshkosh Seed Saver seeds. So those are packaged with some instructions. We have more information about all of those on our website. So that looks a little bit more commercial, but again, it's all free. Yeah. So we just, this is volunteer powered and we run on donations. So those are available for free. People take them and often people leave a donation, right? Because they figure, well, I'd be buying seed anyway somewhere else. So that often works really well. Then we usually have a couple of zones for just some aspects of education related to seed saving. And there's our other tables that where people come, a lot of now we've connected with people who have extensive collections of their own that they want to share from. So people will set up with their own table and they'll have bowls and jars full of seed and we package as they are needed. So it looks kind of like a fair, you know, like a like a seed fair, I guess.
It's pretty cool. How many varieties of seeds do you, the two of you, produce in a year through your various plots?
Well, in every year, it might be maybe about 30. Does that number sound right, Jason?
It does,
But then our entire collection, we're about to take on quite an extensive collection from one of these longtime seed savers that we've been friends with now, that we've met through this process. And so by next spring, we're going to have about 250 varieties that we maintain. And those are already locally adapted varieties.
Wow.
But those aren't going to be grown out every year. So that's why, you know, we're going to be growing out maybe between 50 and 80 different varieties every year, like on a rotation to keep the seed viable.
So this is, I'm trying to picture the plots and people drive by and they talk about the plots themselves.
Jason, you want to talk about the field site out on 20th?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we have, as I mentioned earlier, a pretty large plot on the edge of town. Thank you to Jim, if you're listening. And it's going to be fenced next year. We received a grant recently from the Canary Fund in the Fox Valley, which will allow us to put up a deer fence around this garden, which is important. There are deer which would otherwise eat our plants. But if you looked inside of this garden, what you would see is a very diverse looking garden. I suppose it looks like most backyard gardens, although it's maybe bigger, and we have a larger variety of plants out there. And depending on the time of year that you visit this garden, you might also notice many of the plants are underneath a fine mesh netting. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is we need to control what plants can cross with the other plants. So we may be maintaining, for example, multiple varieties of pepper or multiple varieties of eggplant. And because insects can carry pollen between all of those plants, all the pepper plants or all the eggplants, we need to control which plants are allowed to cross with one another. And so the netting helps us exclude pollinators, and then we have to either hand pollinate or allow the plants to self-pollinate. It depends on the species, but those nets will kind of protect these plants from pollinators. Usually by midsummer, those nets come off and then everything is simply allowed to grow. And maybe later in the season, our seed garden starts to look a little different from a typical backyard garden in that some of the plants are allowed to proceed well into their life cycle, basically completing their life cycle, whereas many backyard gardeners would not allow that to happen. So they're going to harvest the crops that they want for food, and then they're done with those plants, and they might remove those. But for us, we leave things in the garden usually as long as possible because we want the fruits to get really big. And within those fruits, we've got these seeds, and we want those to get really big and develop fully so that they're mature when we harvest them from the plants. So to give you maybe a more concrete example, eggplants are harvested for food at a relatively early stage. You know, just imagine your sort of glossy, dark purple eggplant. That's usually when we would harvest that for eating. if we want to collect seed from an eggplant, that eggplant would be on attached to the plant for probably at least 4, maybe 6 weeks, maybe up to 8 weeks beyond the typical harvest stage. And in that time, it's going to continue to grow. It's going to get a little bit bigger. Its skin will turn dull. It frankly doesn't look very appealing as a food thing. And then, of course, if you were to cut it open, you would see all of these tiny brown seeds in there, which usually we don't see that in an eggplant that you're going to, let's say, chop up and cook for eating. The same goes with something like cucumbers. If you maybe you've sort of missed a cucumber in your backyard garden at some point and it's gotten very large, that's actually our goal. If we're producing cucumber seeds, we want to have really huge inedible eggplant fruit, or sorry, cucumber fruits, because they're going to have big fat seeds inside. And those are the seeds that are really valuable when it comes to propagating the plant.
So if you've got, so if you miss one in the garden, you might go ahead and save that and use it the next.
Well, no. Maybe. It depends, Larry. It depends on the species, right? Here's where the isolation distance, Jason's talked a little bit about this, but with something like cucumber, if that's our example, the cucurbits, so cucumbers, melons, squashes, pumpkins, the insects pollinate and cross-pollinate those very easily. And so in an urban setting, it is unlikely for you to be able to save seeds from that cucumber and grow them to produce fruits that look like the original. It's unlikely because the bees probably cross that. It can be up to a half a mile that they've crossed. So even if it's the only cucumber you grew, your neighbors may have grown, right? You don't have control over that. So that's where the isolation methods come into play, where we can't use distance in the city to isolate the crops of the same variety. So we have to use barriers like netting or something.
So the area in which you guys work, I mean, what would you, how would you describe, you know, if I was going to go to one of your seed play events, and I'm sitting in Madison, would those seeds be okay for Madison?
They probably would. Your growing conditions are quite similar to ours. Yeah. I mean, just that when Jason was talking about commercial seed grown potentially somewhere with very different conditions, we're thinking like a lot of the commercial seed in the U.S. is grown in the Pacific Northwest. So that's very different, right? So the difference between Oshkosh and Madison is nothing compared to the distance between, you know, difference between Wisconsin and Washington State, for example.
So, you know, probably from most areas, or at least many areas of our state, those seeds would work really well.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. Although it does seem to me that Oshkosh, it does have a different climate from Madison.
Yeah.
Whenever I look at the radar, it seems like Madison in the summer is getting rain. And this summer, at least, we didn't get many of the storms that did hit Madison. So we're actually pretty dry up here right now in Oshkosh, whereas Madison tends to be wetter.
Maybe a little
summer.
Moister. Yeah.
Depends on the year, of course.
You know, and what? I'd be willing to give it a try.
It'd be worth trying.
I think you should.
I've got to come up and visit you guys. And if you go to the Oshkosh Seed Savers Collective, you just type that into the website.
It's OshkoshSeedSavers.org.
OshkoshSeedSavers.org. It has been a pleasure talking with you both. Thanks for the work you're doing. It's really important work, and I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
It's very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jason Mills and Julia Chabowski, founders of the Oshkosh Seed Savers Collective. They're doing some really fascinating and worthwhile work for folks here in our state. Pleasure to have them with us. And a pleasure to have you listening in today, and a pleasure to have a team that we have here at WPR. For this show, Clara Neipert, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, Jeff Robbins, all part of it, and our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening to Garden Talk, and stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.